The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everybody, Jay here with a bit of a public service announcement. We wanted to let all of our loyal listeners know that the Agile Uprising is co-sponsoring the upcoming 12th annual Give Thanks for Scrum event produced by Agile Boston. This event is going to have the keynote speaker of Agile's own Jeff Sutherland with a QA panel in the afternoon, and as well as a host of other speakers and presenters. This event runs at 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Tuesday, November 24th, and of course, it is online. For more information, including tickets, please go to www.agileboston.org/give-thanks-for-scrum-2020. And again, we'll have a link to this in the show notes. Thanks again, all, and enjoy the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Agile Uprising podcast. Today's conversation is another in the ORSC Lab series. I'm your host, Leslie Morse, and along with the other ORSC Lab members, Andrew Leff and Billy Shetpeltz, we'll be chatting with our guest, Kat Connor. Kat is an organizational agilist and change champion. With over 30 years of experience in enterprise transformations, she is steeped in the skills and competencies needed to listen deeply to the goals of organizations and help them develop pragmatic approaches for progressive and collaborative transformation and change strategies. Kat, thanks for being with us today.
You bet. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah. You might be one of the first two or three people that I met that I knew was really an ORSC practitioner.
So
like you're part of kind of my own original story for like being aware of this as even a body of work.
This is a thing to get to know.
Is a thing. Mm-hmm. It is. So glad for you to be with us today.
Yeah.
Can you just start off, tell us like, how did you even find out about what ORSC is and what got you into this?
Yeah. You know, it's very much a follow the breadcrumb kind of story, as is most things in my life. I started off about 25 years ago doing other relationship system type of coaching work. I would say they're very mystical, conceptual, or essence. I'll start using some ORSC terminology, essence and origin. And while I love those bodies of work and really lean on those, I was craving something grounded, practical, something that I could actually do in the workplace, right? So I started searching for how to take all of this beingness and essence that I really understand about systems and bring it down. And one of the avenues that I came into understanding who CRR Global is and their body of work is through Amy and Arnold Mandel. You know, I did some work with them on deep democracy, on edge theory, and some process institute. And those are some foundational threads that are pulled through the ORSC body of work. So that's kind of how, that's the breadcrumb that I followed in. So when I found Meridian Faith and I found ORSC, you know, I just, I read the description on their website and my intuitive self just said, you know what, there's something practical and real here that I can use. I can actually bring this in and use with teams, with executives, even with individuals. So I just jump right in.
Mm-hmm. And had you studied other professional coaching approaches before ORSC?
I have about two or three other professional coaching certifications. You know, again, one's on the more mystical side of systems and how systems operate. One is more on the process side, you know, the intelligence of who we are and the different channels that we process through, and how you can leverage that. And I also have a pretty hefty background in yoga, and there's a ton of achara and coaching work within the yoga tradition that I lean on.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Unfortunately, the listeners can't see all of our heads nodding and smiling. But when you were talking about grounded, right, like you were reading about Orsk, you were doing your discovery and going through it, and then you were talking about, you know, connecting to that grounding. And I thought you were going to say it. You started to, and you were talking about bringing down systems, right? Is that similar to bringing down the vision in a sense of large systems, or?
It's bringing down the vision of a system is how I interpret it. I really see the bringing down the vision is a technique you're talking about, you know, within the Orsk family. One that I love and is probably the most challenging one for me to learn and bring in. And I would say I love it because I really, at this time in my life, when I started working with Orsk, I wanted a way to bring the vastness and essence that I could pick up from a system and find a way to bring it into practical action. And the bringing down the vision is a methodology to do that in a fun, creative way. And I was looking for something fun and creative to get people out of their heads about the, I don't know, the SMART goals and the action plans that we needed to create and step away from that and really get together and dream about what's possible for us as a system and not even dream about it. It's what is the bhav? What is the essence? What is the thing that's intangible that we represent that we really want to make real in this world? So I realize I'm going way out there, but that's part of my personality. And, you know, the Orsk techniques are nice ways for me to get grounded and real within myself and with other people. So bringing down a vision is an effective way of doing that.
Yeah. Oh, and I love that this is one of the techniques that you were passionate about. And when we were prepping, it came up sort of as like, ooh, how do we talk about this one? Because I even go back to some of the fundamentals that we talk to other agilists about, like why we want physical cards and go up to the wall and the act of actually taking the physical card and moving it and doing something in the way it engages the neuroscience of our brain and this whole left brain, right brain thing. The bringing down the vision technique really forces people to kind of engage that non-analytical portion of their brain and access voices within themselves and new knowledge and information within themselves and sort of channel that voice of the system in a different way where you just simply have more rich, deep content to even work with through whatever the topic may be.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So just real quick, as we're talking through this, not everyone might be familiar with some of the terms, right? Like voice of the system, even essence, right? Like I always get the googly eye look like, whoa, huh, what? What's this, you know, witchcraft you talk of? So if we could just give a quick blurb on some of the concepts, such as voice of the system. When we talk about systems, we're not talking about necessarily computer systems.
Yeah, so it's a system of interactions, relationships with yourself and other human beings, or it can be yourself and nature or other concepts as well. But I think in Orsk, it's very much about human to human relationships and systems between human beings. So the voice of the system is that, you know, as one or more people come together, they create a quality based on their interactions. And those qualities can be, hey, you know, when Billy and I get together, it's always this fun, playful energy that's created between the two of us. And that is the voice of the two of us coming together. It's also called essence. And I think another way to think about essence is what is the quality that permeates one or more people? And a good one to express that is Nike. Nike has this sense of just do it. It's this impulse of action and get out there. That's the essence of Nike. So that's a great way to express it for at a company level. So
can we play with that for a second? Like what's sort of the essence of the voice or of the system, or we might also call it the third entity of the four of us on this podcast? Like, let's kind of do it real time. Yeah. How would we describe it?
Well, before we got on, we actually did a centering exercise, which was to ground us within ourselves, you know, on multiple dimensions and see if we could listen in to our own soma, our own physical body. And through listening in, we're listening to the voice of ourselves and then listening to the voice of our shared selves. So at the end of this centering exercise, we ask the question, you know, what's coming up? What's emerging for us in this moment? I felt like it was a pretty consistent, you know, phrase, a set of phrases that we use to describe what we're all about in this moment. And you can share, you know, from your perspective, if you'd like, Billy. Yeah.
Yeah. So what came up for me after that exercise where it was the words grounding and wisdom. And what is so interesting to me right now is, as the four of us are here, and for me, this is part of our third entity with the four of us, is I'm so calm and so peaceful. It's almost like I don't have anything to say. Like, it's a super weird grounding wisdom sort of place that I'm in.
So. That transcends you. The kind of that really expresses who we are coming together.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot of connection and alignment for me as well that I really attribute to having done that exercise together.
Oh. Yeah. And there was, we talked about this too, and that therapeutic quality of, you know, the four of us in this discussion together and the grounding exercise. So, you know, in relationship right now, there's a very therapeutic feel to this, at least due to the exterior climate, as well as, you know, everything that's going on in the world. So, it's great. I mean, I love the way you described that too, Kat, and really tied it up in a bow, and you threaded in Nike. I like to joke, like, Billy and my third entity very much feels like the best box of candy you can ever eat. It's just an intensity about it, and mm-hmm. then it makes you happy, but then you can crash really quick. Sometimes it's too much candy and your teeth are about to rot. So yeah,
that's essence. Yeah. As the voice of your entity.
Yeah. When the voice of our system showed up, because like the phrase you had said when you're talking about your connection with Orsk and bringing it down and grounding it, like mm-hmm. I immediately fired on that one. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I want to ask her about that. But like, so did Drew. And so like, it's like mm-hmm. our system knew that that was a thing to play with. So like, these are like really practical ways that all this stuff actually shows up, you know, for us. And we would have conversations like this with our clients. Like this.
Yeah. So what's valuable about knowing what your third entity is? Right. If I was going to say, I'm going to go out and learn me some system stuff and learn bringing down the vision and learn third entity, what does it bring to coaches out there or others that may be interested in doing this?
I know I have an answer, but I want to hear y'all. Go for it, Billy.
Okay. So I like to use this with leadership teams, especially because once we can define their third entity and get them used to seeing it and feeling it, it becomes easier for them to notice when the third entity isn't speaking, when the third entity is disruptive or causing a temper tantrum or anything like that. And as a leadership team, they really need, it's so helpful when they can identify their own essence as a group and a third entity together.
I love the third entity listening to what's happening in the voice of the system, because it's a reflection of what's alive. If you can really tap into and listen into it deeply, you can follow the flow of aliveness. And that brings just this, I don't know, this feeling of like this joy, this tingliness, this I'm eating a York peppermint patty kind of feeling to the team, you know. And it's a missing component, I think, in a lot of our interactions these days, particularly since we're doing so much remote work. It's how to connect in a level, you know, that's not that's through the digital medium, that's so much more in who we are. And we can feel that aliveness of who we are, then we're engaged. And when we're engaged, we're off to the races.
Yeah.
Have you, like, it just occurred to me that we are remote right now. We're all mm-hmm. looking at videos of each other.
We are.
But this has been a very successful example of how in a few short minutes, you can connect to a group third entity pretty quickly, even though we're remote. I'll admit I have not actually tried this on my remote meetings the last few weeks. What about you guys? You've all been remote as well. Have you been trying this?
I do it all the time. I got to tell you, I am just deadened by being on Zoom 8 hours a day. So I've been experimenting with so many different things to try to bring myself alive in creating this connection. And there are a lot of other ORS tools we could use too, to be able to create that connection and recognize what it is. It's something that I'm experimenting with, bringing little bits and pieces in to see how far I can go with this team. Is it too weird for them, or are they, can I normalize it enough that they're willing just to try it and see what's there? So yeah, I've been doing it a lot.
Yeah. Well, and it brings up to me the importance of honing that listening skill for what the voice of the system is, because the quality of our verbal collaboration is diminished through this kind of remote stuff, or ways of interacting. Building the muscle for how to listen in a different way, I think, is so important for us just like in the world right now.
You bet. I mean, I would take that and say, how does that translate into Agile? And, you know, my world is heavy Agile organizational transformation, right? So I use the listening into the entity of my change partners or those undergoing change and the organization itself. All those are different systems of human systems. And using that to guide me on what do they need in the moment that may not be what I want them to be doing, or may not be what they think they should be doing, or may not be the playbook that's in front of them, right? So helping them start to listen in to what's real for them is an important skill that I think that we can bring to them through understanding the voice of the system. It's actually more supportive of their change strategies and how they can transform without feeling like change is being imposed upon them.
Yeah, this is a perfect lobcat to one of the other topics you said you were passionate about, which is aspects of change theory, specifically the edge theory model, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think as agilists, right, so commonly we're working with organizations on some sort of change strategy around increasing or enhancing organizational agility. Right. So if they think about the edge that they're on, it's their primary is we're not agile enough. Their secondary is something like we want to be more agile. Very, very kind of simplified version of it. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden now, like with the entrance of, you know, a global pandemic or whatever the next like economic crisis or whatever thing is, that's a new edge that everybody's now facing, in addition to whatever organizational change strategy they had kind of underway. So it talked to us, right? You know, especially like the Mendel work is all about edge. So just talk to us some about that idea of edge theory, how it plays with this voice of the system and in the way that you're working with your clients to listen differently.
Well, I'm just trying to think how it's the best way to describe this. I do so much under the covers and intuitively. And one of the things that ORS does help me do is create words and normalize. And I think that edge theory is one of those things that you can keep at the superficial level around you want to go from point A to point B and you're feeling resistance. Let's work with resistance, right? In a very simple kind of way. Edge theory can also be really deep, going into depth psychology and understanding kind of what are the patterns within our soma and in our conditioned tendencies that we may or may not even be aware of that's driving some of our reactions, our resistance patterns. And those are also edges that we need to cross in any kind of change that we're making. So a lot of what I do is just very simple, is just describe what edges are. Just give them some education. I also normalize resistance quite a bit. Like, wow, I see that this is what you really want. And I'm sensing something in you as an organization or in you as a human being that you're struggling with, you know, would you like to talk about it and make it more visible? And their willingness and how far they want to make that visible is really the coaching process, right? You know, where you want to take that in and what technique do you want to use at that point based on where they are?
Yeah, I love that you're kind of referencing that quality of so much as in really any kind of coach, but lots as an ORS coach is like just revealing the system to itself.
It is.
Being that mirror and the feeling of when they just want to spray that like fog spray like, oh, I'm not ready to see this yet. So I'm going to pull out that can and kind of spray fog all over the mirror. That way I don't have to see it. Which is another way of kind of like, oh, they're revealing an edge there of not even wanting to see.
Yeah. And Kat, I love how you were saying it's about a way that we can listen into what's real for them. And as Agile coaches, especially, we are walking them through many edges in a transformation. So here's the topic.
I think that's our job. I think Agile coaches are edge workers. We just don't name it that.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm wondering how something shifted for you over the years, right? Like, you probably started out in Agile coaching similar to the rest of us, maybe not, but usually the topic of road mapping, right? So this has come up recently. It's been causing a lot of resistance in the transformation I've been working with. And it's because this is an edge for them. But the more I've evolved into these different coaching methods, I like to look at what's real for them, what's emerging, and it makes the idea of road mapping the transformation a lot harder, because we're going to work with different edges and see how they go across the edges and things like that. Has that changed? Has trying to predict transformation and what topics you're going to work on and your coaching roadmaps, has that changed for you over the years?
Well, I have a bias away from predetermined roadmaps, just because I have a preference for listening into what the system is really wanting. However, we are working with late stage adopter companies, and there is a desire to understand patterns and what's possible. So I can go there in terms of road mapping. I blend a little bit of the patterns of what are possible. These are the things we typically see that work really well in these different areas of transformation across the whole business agility spectrum. And let's layer in, where are you with this? And so I often inject a number of things, Orsky kind of things. I call them different things. I do things like, aspirationally, where would you like, how far do you want to go with this particular area of your transformation? You know, that reveals the, you know, what is secondary. And getting there, and in the conversation of getting there, it's going to reveal all sorts of edges and reactions that emerge in the conversation with folks. Capture that, have a conversation around that, because those are your risks. Those are your particular limitations. Those are the impediments from a human system perspective that you're going to be working with. So, you know, I'll deliberately use conversation and not use as much Orsk language. I'll reframe it to something else. But the essence of what I'm doing is essentially the same. I'm trying to get them to dream big. How far are they willing to go? You know, kind of, you can use original myth or in the myth of where you're going. Bringing down the vision is a great exercise to get them to see how far they want to go. And then through the course of the conversation, all the edges will naturally emerge. And there's like such goodness there that can be translated into change strategies.
Yep,
you can bring other Orsk things in, you know, or other techniques.
Yeah, I love that.
Is that getting to what you're looking for, Billy?
Yeah. And especially the patterns of what's possible. That's great, right? Like, we are not literally defining and predicting their roadmap for them, because it is going to come from them. So I love everything you just listed. Thank you. Yeah. And I don't think many of us did that at the start of our Agile coaching journey. So I think that's an advanced skill that we've been acquiring over the years. So
it is an advanced skill. And I think that, you know, I think we need as agilists to be real with ourselves in terms of, there are systems out there, most of them, and I can use other models to talk about the maturity and quality of system like Lulu. You know, Orsk is a nice blend in with these other models, you know, to understand where an organization or an individual is from a maturity perspective. And you can, if you've got an organization in a Lulu world that's red or orange, so to speak, they're going to need the playbook. They're going to need the patterns of what's possible. They're going to need something that their minds can wrap around initially. So start there and take them the next step. And the next step could be some of these more aspirational, S&C type of places that help them expand and broaden what they believe is possible for themselves.
Yeah. And Kat, you're really pointing to that idea of meeting the client where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And one of the things that, right, often sparks such debate among agilists is sometimes the struggle, our own personal edges of meeting the client where they are, when they are in something like a lower stage of maturity and spiral dynamics or whatever model it is that you might be like, oh, I'm too good now to go meet you where you are because you're not ready to perform where I want you to.
Or the exact opposite. I can only see this particular framework and that's what you need to do. I mean, there's a whole spectrum out there,
yes,
right?
Yes, you're right. There is.
Yeah. There is ORSC work that we need to do on ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, as coaches, and we're part of the dynamic, even though we're more in a coaching capacity, we are part of the system in a way that we influence it. So understanding our preferences, our internal edges, our biases and what we in our maturity, basically, and what we bring to the table is equally important. So a lot of these things like the voice of the system and edge theory are things that you can do with a crazy inside your own head, right? You know, so we all have a system inside of our own head, inside of our own beings that we can work with.
Yeah, there's something really interesting. The more exposure that I get in going through certification, I really have become more aware of practitioners in the ORSC space, the ease of command, the grace of which you move fluidly through a conversation. And Kat, you're a perfect example of this. Having worked with you on certain things, I've seen it in action as well, even listening to you now. It's really interesting to see how you can tap the system. Faith says that all the time. I love that expression. Just tap the system, right? And I'm curious if this plays a part in it. And I don't know, this might go off on a tangent, and if we need to do a part two, we can. But do you believe that when we're starting to reveal the system to itself, or when the system starts to reveal it to itself, does that wake up the EQ portion of the brain to partner with the IQ portion of the brain, similar to like iron sharpens iron? The essence is then becoming more revealing to people about their EQ. They're more emotionally in tune or awake to even be able to comprehend some of these concepts. Or is that too, did I go too far out into the solar system there?
No, you didn't. And I can take it even further out if you want.
Let's do it.
My background is heavy, you know, non-dualistic yoga background. And my perspective is when you start seeing the nature of your own self, that changes who you are. That changes the understanding of you. And just by having that happen, by the revealing happening, you will start to deepen and grow in incredible ways. So yes, I do believe, you know, we could use whatever paradigm or framework you want to call, you know, IQ, EQ, RSI, you know, the different adult maturity models as well that are out there. I think when we start to contemplate ourselves and look at ourselves, we naturally change ourselves.
I love that. That's a great response.
And what came up for me is that once that system changes or once the reveal happens, it can't ever actually go back to being unchanged. Like,
I've worked a lot with a client that will complete, I mean, you've probably experienced this,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
that will just like dive back into darkness, you know, unconsciousness. And you're just like, wow, do I need to have this conversation for the 50th time? You know, and they're like, oh yeah, I remember. So I think it's natural that we go in and out of our own awareness until we're steeped enough in it that we can remain there. And that happens progressively.
Yeah, there is a point of crossing an edge of seeing where you can't unsee it.
I would agree.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting to actually look at that aspect of the voice of the system. Mm-hmm. Where are people in their ability to kind of unsee what is possible? Mm-hmm. And that actually gives us a sense of, right, if we think about edge theory at the system perspective, like the whole system will cross the edge only after we kind of, and we'll pull in Malcolm Gladwell here, like the tipping point of individuals crossing the edge kind of, there's enough momentum there, right? Sort of. So it's like once enough people can't unsee something, like there becomes a greater seeing of the whole.
Right. The secondary or where you want to go now becomes primary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the next edge emerges and That's emerges right. and emerges.
Mm-hmm. So then do we think that the system, once it hits that tipping point, let's say it's going agile or whatever, will it just leave some people behind? So if there's parts of the system that decide it's not for them or they don't want to go, is it now a new system in a new primary state and that person or that group is just kind of left behind?
Well, I like to think of it in a different way. You know, the way that I think about, you know, when I've gone through a significant change in an organization, it's really important. I have values in myself. It's really important for me to be very clear about kind of my purpose and kind of what's true for me and match as much as I can that to an organization. You know, so I'm looking for as much as a match as possible to be there. And if the organization is going through significant changes and it's no longer aligned with what's true for me, what's important for me, then I have some choices to make. And the choices can be, is it worth it enough for me? Is it touch what's really deeply, inherently passionate for me to make the change, to continue to be in alignment with the organization or not? Or not. And either way is okay. You know, so I just look at it really, you know, I like to help individuals and organizations when they're going through change and if they're really struggling inside the change, say, you know, ignore the noise and the what's happening. You know, this person's got a new title, you're being moved to a new thing, you got a new job. Ignore all that and say, go deeply inside and what is true for you, what's important for you in your work, in your profession, and how you show up and how you lead, what's really true for you. Is it still in alignment? Can you find some way for it to still be in alignment to how it's changing in your organization? And if not, that's okay.
That's so wise. Thank you. I think that's going to help a lot of people as they're listening to this. So yeah, that's really good. What's true for us.
Yeah. Oh, and I think there's actually that almost can bring us back to that technique we started with, which was bringing down the vision and reconnecting with what that vision was and how you can use that specific tool to kind of help navigate some of those exact decisions. So like, let's use this as an opportunity. Like, what is bringing down the vision? What's sort of the format of it? Why would you use it? Because that was another one of the things you were sort of interested in exploring with folks.
So bringing down the vision, the reason I'm interested in that is I've worked in so many different organizations that just want to get to, you know, what are my SMART goals? And then what's my action plan in order to get the SMART goals? That's consensus reality, right? In ORSC, we call it the essence state, which is the highest, broadest state that contracts down into the dreaming state. And that's just a place of metaphor. I also like to throw magic in there. And then you can contract that down into the place of reality, kind of the place where I'm actually going to take this action and this is the result that's going to happen from that. And if we live so much at the consensus reality level, you know, we lose the passion, we lose the aliveness, we lose the reason why we're even there doing what we're doing with each other. So I love to use the bringing down the vision as a way to see what the essence and dreams really are of the system, have them really see that and define that, because it may be different than what it was a year ago or 3 years ago. What is it right now? And define how you're going to act and line up as individuals, as an organization underneath that or behind that or with that. And you may find, you know, you said chills, you know, I got chills when you said that, Leslie, because I was envisioning bringing down the vision within myself as an individual and then bringing down the vision of the organization and seeing, is there a match? Is there a match? Can I still be here? Can I support this change? Can I lead in this change? And how do I want to be with this?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, to even just use, you gave us the language for it, Kat, right? The consensus reality of actually bringing down the vision involves sort of like an internal visualization of if the vision was a creature or an animal or some sort of entity or thing, what qualities would it have, and what does it need to thrive, and what does it live with, and right, who are its, not necessarily competitors, but what threatens it, and how does it operate when it's in stress? And so you're exploring all of this through a visualization and then actually tapping into that other side of your brain and drawing whatever this creature sort of is, which sounds a little crazy and woo-woo to a lot of people, but it's so magical when you get them to really do it. And then the way you can kind of unfold those drawings and unpack them in a way that yields smart goals and objectives and very consensus reality tactics that we might want to start working around. Yeah. It's wild.
It is. I mean, Orsk and, you know, its predecessor, you know, other like the Mendels, they use different channels of how to get information. And we're so used to using the verbal and perceptual channel that there are other channels of visualization, channels of movement, other channels that bring in and tap different parts of our brain and different parts of our being and bring information in. And the bringing down the vision uses a visual channel that we don't often get to use in our professional lives. And it brings in different quality and kind of information. Yeah. So drawing together is kind of strange, but it's amazing what comes up. It really is.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, recently I was stretching myself with something that I learned from Leslie and Mike Holton's class. I won't say the name but it's Orsk stuff for Agile. And it was a warm-up exercise, and I used it recently with a leadership group that was entering into a discussion that was really heated. I mean, it was going to be a bad couple hours. So I thought, well, let's just try to get them into essence, and had them draw with their non-dominant hand, just any scribble or any kind of warm-up picture that represented where they were at right now as we started the meeting. And I was shocked at the pictures that came out of it, because the first question was, where are you at now? Where would you like to be? What would that picture morph into at the end of this session? And it was really cool. Like, I did not think this group of leaders was going to go for it, but it really bonded them in like 2 minutes flat. So
yeah, so using a totally different channel gets you out of how you interact with each other normally. And you just created a roadmap of edge, primary exactly. And secondary right there. Where are you now? Where you want to be? You know,
exactly. Yeah. I did save the pictures. Yes.
Yeah.
That's great. What else are we curious about that we want to ask Kat before we wrap up today, y'all? Because I know there's so many places we could go.
Yeah, it's something that you said, Leslie, and I don't know if this is, you know, again, kind of where this will take us, but it's almost like when you were describing the relationship with the drawing, like going through that exercise, like you were almost doing a design team alliance or a design leadership alliance, right? Like, how do you want to respond in conflict? How do you want to thrive? Is there any relationship between, I feel all of it's very connected. It's just the method is a little bit different, but it felt very connected to how you walk through that. I'd be curious if Kat, if there's any thought process around that when bringing down the vision. Is it like designing a team alliance with the vision in a way?
Potentially. I'm sitting with it. I think you need to define kind of what the scope of what your vision is, right? So the scope of designing a vision could be a designing your team alliance. The scope could be, how do we want to interact as a leadership team? The scope could be, I want to create this great product together. The scope could be, we need to develop a different decision-making kind of methodology between the enterprise and the line of business. I think defining the scope of it is pretty important, because the creature can go have tentacles all over the place otherwise. So you really want to get very specific in how you're describing it. How would it be similar to designing a team alliance? I think that if designing the team alliance were stepping into more of the qualitative essence aspects of things, and then starting to bring that down into tactical, this is how we're going to behave and hold each other accountable. That has a certain feeling that's similar to bringing down the vision to me.
Well, I'm actually feeling inspired around, like, having just recently designed an alliance with a coaching client that was struggling to tap into the essence of the atmosphere they wanted to have, by actually using drawing and using sort of the framework of bringing down the vision to get them to tap into those qualities, gives them another way to access the language that they might need to actually design a deep and meaningful alliance, which I think is so important for us as agilists, because so often we just think working agreement. And working agreement is very much consensus reality type design, where a true design team alliance in the ORSC sense is very little in some ways consensus reality and so much dreaming and essence work about how it is we want to be together. So I love, Andrew, that you asked the question, because like, yeah, I've got access to something new now.
Yeah. And the system, just real quick, the system revealed itself right there, right? So it was very revealing. It, for me, it did, for the simple fact is I asked that question because I was thinking through how do we tie this back to the work we do for others, right? Not for ourselves. But so I just thought it was very interesting the way that you walked through that. And Kat, your response also just coupled into that, it makes it a lot less abstract and wooey for me when I can connect it to how we can actually walk through this without scaring the shit out of our clients.
So not scaring the shit out of our clients, you know, listening into what they can tolerate, right? Can they tolerate drawing? Or is designing the alliance going to be moving?
Oh no.
Or is designing the alliance,
I'm going to note this time, so
going to be a song, or is it going to, you know, whatever it's going to be.
I think our connection's been cutting in and out.
Yeah. It doesn't always skip out on the recording all the time. Like sometimes the cloud may capture it, even though it doesn't come through to us.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
You're back. Froze there for a good minute. Can you hear us?
You talking to me or to Billy?
To Kat.
No,
to
you Kat.
You froze.
Yeah, we lost you.
We lost your whole
response. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I can edit that.
Yeah. Okay. Drew, give her that lob again. What did you say?
Scaring the shit out of our clients.
So let's do a 3-second pause so I'll have a marker when I go to edit. And then if you don't mind answering, Kat, that'd be great. So.
Well, I think that's a really good example of how do we listen into what is tolerable and how much of the edge we can push, you know, with our clients. You know, so are they going to be okay with drawing a DTA? Maybe it'd be easier for them to sing it in a song. Maybe it'd be easier for them to cut it out of magazine headlines. Maybe, you know, whatever it is. I think the beauty in the ORSC work is that it also encourages experimenting with different channels, because we're naturally aligned to and can create in different channels. So leverage that when you're listening to what's possible for the client. And another plug for normalization, because I think that's really key for us as ORSC coaches, is, okay, so maybe drawing is edgy. Normalize it for them. Let's just try it. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be beautiful. We're just looking for something different, and let's play together for the next 5 minutes. That kind of normalization.
Yeah, it's great. That was a huge topic that we touched on with Mike Holton and the other podcasts we did around normalization. So yeah, that is a gift that has been given to me from the ORSC work. So it is a true gift.
Awesome. Kat, as we move to wrap up, like I think you've already given us so many gifts around, right, the theory and the wisdom and the inspiration, but also making it really practical and how we can use this. Any other advice or tips to maybe people that are just starting their ORSC journey or thinking about going down this path?
Don't be scared to try it. Normalize it within yourself first so that you can actually do it with others. So check in with your own edges and really work with those and then try it.
It's awesome.
Excellent. Yeah. Any final kind of wisdom or thoughts? We'll hear from everybody on this one, actually.
I'm glad to hear that I was able to bring this down and make it practical. That's my goal these days. So thank you all for playing with me in this space.
Yeah. Awesome. Billy, final thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'll just double tap on all of the moments that we were talking about and Kat, that you were bringing up, doing this with work within ourselves first, finding our edges, normalizing within ourselves, what's our own vision. I think that's all really important. So I'll double tap on like that again and bring it up.
Mm-hmm. Great. And Mr. Leff.
Yeah, I just appreciate the grace in which these concepts are threaded through a conversation. I appreciate someone that truly believes in the work that they do and the way that they can articulate it with emotion without beating me over the head with a bat, right? Even though this language makes me extremely uncomfortable, as a practitioner, I get better and better each day. And hearing others with just the way that you're able to talk people through this kind of level of abstraction, discomfort, change, different, is just a skill that I hope to continue to hone in on for myself. So I really appreciate, you know, the way that you've brought this to the table, and hopefully the people that are listening will be a lot more curious and provide us with some feedback as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have to say that, you know, if we go back to the episode where we talked about just our high dream and our goals for what we wanted the Orsk Lab series of episodes to be like this episode, just this conversation that are going through now, like, is so beyond that high dream in terms of just connecting for all of what I hope these conversations could be. And I love that. So thanks to all of you for being part of it.
Thanks to our entity for creating this space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Kat, like you talked about, right, sort of as we were designing for today, wanting to share with people voice of the system, aspects of edge theory, bringing down the vision. Like, is there anything left unsaid for you around those topics that you really want to make sure people hear?
These are kind of next level advanced topics. So go lightly with how you use those, but feel free to explore them. We're getting into some crunchy stuff with yourself and with folks, and being compassionate and being real about where you can go based on your own experience and maturity. I think it's also pretty important awareness to bring to yourself as you start to venture into these topics.
Great. Great. Thank you, Kat. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Billy, for being here. I appreciate it. Kat, our guest of honor.
Thank you.
So many hugs. If I could come through the screen and give you a hug right now.
You bet.
Wash your hands.
Yes. Indeed. And thanks for listening to this episode of the Orsk Lab series on Agile Uprising. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and invite you to follow the hashtag ORSC, Orsk, on Twitter to be part of the conversation, give us feedback, and let us know how you think the series is going. You can also subscribe to Agile Uprising podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider of choice to get notifications of new episodes as soon as they are available. Thanks for listening.